Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 80. My name is John Morgan, coming to you from Manchester, England for UFC 204, Bisping versus Henderson 2. Gotta say, European events are starting to become some of my favorite events because the setup that we have right now is a crew. We got about 10 people in here hanging out, working, sipping some frosty beverages, doing good things. And I gotta say, that's not something we do anywhere else. So let's get right into it. I wanted to, for UFC 204 in Manchester, Michael Bisping fighting Dan Henderson, the Manchester's own Michael Bisping fighter. I wanted to get two of England's finest journalists, most researched, most educated journalists. Those guys weren't available, so okay, no, I'm just kidding, obviously. Our good friend Shamat Karsandu is here. What's going on, brother?
I'm very well, but you know what? This guy right here, Harry Williams, let me clear my throat for you, my friend. Harry Williams, UK MMA media pioneer and from Manchester. That's the guy you really want to talk to.
That's what's up. I was saving the special introduction. You stole my introduction, but I guess you know, you can do that. You're part of the team. You can do that. You know what I mean? Harry Williams is here for the very first time joining us and wanted to get your point of view on just this whole situation because you are – now, let me get this right. Mancunian? Is that the
That's
word
right,
I was supposed
Mancunian.
To use? That is a weird word.
Or a Manc for short, M-A-N-C.
Okay, Manc. A Manc?
Yeah, whichever. Mancunian or Manc.
Fair enough. All right, well, let's talk about this. The whole point of this event, first of all, let me just say, I was actually talking to someone in the UFC about this. The UFC does this thing where they plan events, you know, a year out, as you have to. And you know, they have broadcast schedules and to book arenas and venues and all the places they're doing. You know, they do these things and they plan it way out. This event, though, was never supposed to be in Manchester. It was never going to happen. But then, holy shit, Michael Bisping shocks the world, knocks out Luke Rockhold, and the UFC says, we got to capitalize on that. Let's go to Manchester with Michael Bisping. Let me just say, bravo. I love the fluidity in the schedule. I love the idea that, like, hey, when we've got a guy that we can capitalize on, let's do it. So I just want to say personally, I think this is a brilliant move by the UFC to come here to Manchester. I'm sure, Harry, I'm sure you definitely feel the same.
Oh, definitely. 20 minutes on the bus for me into town. It's way better than a few hours on a plane.
Nice. All right, let's talk about first Michael Bisping. Now, here's the deal. Our good friend Simon Head, who's going to join us later, he is always quick to point out that Michael Bisping is not technically from Manchester, right? I mean, we're kind of using a little bit of a leeway there to say he's from Manchester.
Yeah, it's from Clitheroe, just up the road. It's not too far away, but he's not exactly he's not a Mancunian. He's from Clitheroe, but we like to take him on as our own.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I mean, is it out of the ordinary to say that somebody from a town that far away is from Manchester? I mean, is this like a fabrication the UFC is making to capitalize, or is that like acceptable? I mean, like, you know, Australians, they steal Kiwis all the time and stuff like that. They're like, yeah, it's our own.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of a fabrication, but it can kind of slide into both. I mean, being like so close to Manchester, we kind of have to acknowledge. And it's just if you said to somebody that is from Clitheroe, they're not going to know where you're on about. So if you round it up, better just to say Manchester. Really,
Manchester, easy enough. Yeah. But I'm not going to lie. I'm from a little town called DeSoto, Texas. It's a suburb of Dallas. But I don't ever tell anybody I'm from DeSoto, dude. Like, I'm from Dallas, you know what I mean? And technically, I was born in a hospital in Dallas. I just grew up in DeSoto, so.
That's like me and Abby saying we're from Southall, which is on the outskirts of London. But anybody else, where are you from? Oh, you're from London. Yeah. You're from London, England. That's what's up right there.
Damn straight. That's how we do it. All right. Harry, I got to imagine you have been following Michael Bisping's career from start to finish. Well, I said finish. Oops, sorry. I didn't mean to make him retire already. From start to the current day. Talk about UFC 199. What was the emotion from a British journalist, a Manchester journalist point of view, seeing it? Because, as we all know, we're here to cover the sport. We're not here to be anybody's friends, but you can't help it. You develop relationships with people over time. You interview them so many times. You're there for so many fights. Give me your point of view, because I remember going into UFC 199 being incredibly happy that Michael Bisping got a title shot, because to me, he is a consummate, like, company guy. He's a professional man. He's been putting in his time for the company. And I've always said this. Every time they announce a Michael Bisping fight, my first reaction is like, eh. And then by the time it's fight day, I'm like, oh, shit, I can't wait to see this fight. Because he's so good at selling fights and getting underneath people's skin. So, for me, I was just happy that he got the title shot. I was like, good for Mike, man. Good for him. He's going to get a nice payday. He's going to say he fought for the title. And God bless him, man. He deserves And then he goes out there. And I didn't think he was going to win. I didn't think he had a chance.
Not many people did.
Right. And then he wins. And oh, my God, that post-fight press conference was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. The happiness that he had, the way he handled stuff. So from your point of view, who's been with this guy from the beginning and seen it, talk to me about that whole experience. What was that like for you?
I mean, we've seen his ups and his downs on the local scene, going back to his old days when he used to fight here domestically. But even going into UFC 199, not many people expected it. And if there's one thing more of the English people do, we kind of lack on getting behind our own guys. We put an insurmountable amount of pressure on them, especially with, say, the England football team, or the England soccer team, as you
right.
guys would say.
Right. I was with you. I knew
we kind of put
your
an
insurmountable team.
We kind of put an insurmountable amount of pressure on them, so they can never live up to the hype. So with Bisping, everybody's always counted him out, even though he's undefeated on UK soil. We've always kind of he's got so close, and then he's let us down.
Right.
Not let us down, but he's always
up a little bit short.
Yeah, he's always came up short, and granted, that was to a lot of people who were using PEDs at the time, which is a valid point.
It's fair to say, yeah. Man. I know. You know, you hate to just throw out stuff like that. It's fair to say the number of people that he's, you know, come in contact with that have, mm-hmm. you know, been approved for TRT, that have tested positive, somewhere like it's shocking.
Yeah, I mean, when I watched UFC 199, granted, I didn't actually stay up for it. I watched it in the morning, and I'm never one to really mark out about the way a fight ends. I'm never one to really get really excited and be like, holy God. I mean, the last time I remember it was probably Chad Mendes versus McGregor in the second round when he finished him. But I didn't jump up. I just was kind of like, wow, I didn't expect it to go that way and finish so close to the end of the second yeah. round. But then when Bisping won, I just remember seeing him land that left hand, and I saw Rockhold fall for the first time, and I was like, wait a second, is this really happening? Is he really folding so early? And then he dropped him again, and even my sister, who's not the biggest MMA fan, she does her own thing, and even she looked at me and her jaw dropped. She was like, oh! And then we both just kind of looked at each other, and we both literally jumped off the couch, and we're in front of the TV, and we're like, oh my God, we've finally got an English champion.
Right.
I rushed straight to my computer, and I wrote an article about what it means for UK MMA. Just ideas flew, and I was so, so excited to finally have a UK champion. I mean, Dan Hardy got the closest yeah. years ago, and how the hell he got out of that armbar from GSP, who knows, but he's like, Bisping finally did it, and he's one of ours. We'll say that one.
I was going to ask you, I mean, how big of a star is Michael Bisping, especially in Manchester? Because I wonder, I was going to say, could he walk the streets right out here? But nobody should walk the streets right out here. There are some drunken weirdos out here on the street.
We are the sketchiest part of town.
Which is proof that we booked the right place. I mean, we definitely got the right Airbnb apartment when you know there's drunk people walking around outside.
Yeah.
Can he walk down the street here? I mean, of course, this is a football crazy country.
Yeah.
It's a football crazy town. I mean, Manchester is not that big of a city. I don't know if people realize that. How many people live here?
I couldn't actually give you a proper number, but I think it's just over a million.
Yeah, that's what I thought. About a million, which is kind of like the size of like Las Vegas.
Yeah.
But there's two of the world's most powerful sporting franchises
yep.
in this town of only a million people. So I've got to imagine that soccer/football is king here.
Yeah.
What about Mike Bisping? How does he resonate with the town itself? I mean, is he a star here?
I mean, in recent times, his star power has definitely grown. And we've seen a surge of that. Maybe it's due to people paying more attention due to the McGregor factor, but There are times, like I remember a few years ago, 2013 to be exact, there was a UK MMA Expo at Event City just next door to the Trafford Centre.
Right.
And Bisping was swarmed from the minute he went in. He had a few too many beforehand.
No.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you at all.
He definitely had a few.
He was roadshow ready.
He had a few before he went in, but he was swarmed by fans from the minute, because I think throughout all the UK fighters we've had, even guys like Dan Harder and the highest of the UK guys, Bisping has always had that ability to speak louder and go above everybody else, and that's really resonated with the people of Manchester. And he doesn't look like somebody who'd be as successful as he is. He looks like he'd walk the streets and be and fit in fine. But yeah. definitely, if you saw him walking the streets now with the championship belt on his shoulder or not, you definitely he'd be swarmed for
nice.
Sure.
Is he? You know, it's kind of funny because you mentioned his kind of brashness as a target. I mean, is he a good representative of Manchester? Like, is that attitude and that swagger? Is that like a Manchester type attitude?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even some of the derogatory terms he was using against Rockhold at the post-fight presser that he apologized for saying. A lot of them are very, very, very common around Manchester.
Okay, so politically correctness is not a strong thing.
At this time, I just want to say I'm from London and not from Manchester. Just saying.
Fair enough. All right, so let's say this. You mentioned the fact that, you know, staying up to watch fights.
Yeah.
This is staying up to watch fights. Now, we are talking, I guess, I didn't even think about it before we came over here. This is the first pay-per-view in England, right?
Because all it's UFC 112, I think.
Was that a pay-per-view?
I think
that was 110. 112 was Abu Dhabi.
You're right.
Yeah.
Was that a pay-per-view?
That was an EMEA event.
Because
yes, right.
I came out, 75 was Rampage and Dan Henderson, mm-hmm. but that was on Spike. Yeah, so, I mean, so it's the first pay-per-view in England, so that's cool. I mean, it is cool. I think the fluidity of, like, saying, let's capitalize, let's do an event mm-hmm. in Manchester, let's do it, you know? But you, as the, you know, pioneer of British MMA journalism, as the Manchester guy, you find out the UFC's coming, you're like, oh, hell yes, I'm going to get to cover an event in my backyard, and it's our guy defending the belt, mm-hmm. it's a pay-per-view, this is not a fight night, and you're like rubbing your hands together, yeah. you're just like, oh my God, this is the greatest day of my life, and then they say, oh, by the way, we're going to stick to American pay-per-view time, so it's the first fight is at 11:30 p.m., mm-hmm. and the main event will kick off somewhere around like 5 a.m., your initial thoughts, it sold out. Mm-hmm. They sold the place out. Cool. Is that an insult? I know I think Ricky Hatton did it here before.
Yeah, Hatton did it against Costa Zoo quite a few years ago. But boxing's always – back then boxing was a lot higher. Well, it still kind of is in the British eye. Boxing is more traditional, so
right.
the English people accept it more. They don't really – get into much MMA until it goes to the ground and all that rolling on the floor shit.
Right.
They don't really follow that too much. But as soon as I found out it was in the American Times, I did feel like it was a slight slap in the face because this is our guy. We've dedicated ourselves to cards throughout the year till the early hours of the morning, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., when the sun's rising and it's hard to get any sleep whatsoever. So then for them to come over here and do a card in USA time, I mean, I'm sure it's fine for you guys who don't have to adjust.
Right.
But for us, it did feel a slight insult at first. I understood why they did it, because if we want big cards, we have to settle for US times. But at the same time, you think, sure, Bisping's going to get some pay-per-view points. But in the long run, you'd think maybe if they do commit to a UK time, maybe they'll capitalize on prime time and build a bigger following off that. I mean, Cage Warriors the other week on BT Sport, they put their event on prime time and got 32,000 live viewers, which is more than they got for the UFC that night.
Wow.
So on BT Sport. So it says a lot about acting on prime time TV.
That's interesting. So I think the fact that it sold out, I think, is cool, man. That shows the support. But
well, there's a little bit of controversy around the selling out.
Okay, talk about that, because the controversy being that it seemed like a lot of it went to resellers, right?
Yeah, a lot of it went to, like, Ticket Touts, StubHub, sister companies like Get Me In for, like, double the price. So it's a bit controversial. A lot of people were complaining straight away.
But I don't think that's just an MMA or a UFC issue. I mean, I think we've all been there, right? You want to get a ticket to your favorite rap artist or your rock band or whatever the case may be, and it's just like, oh, damn, I couldn't get tickets. Mm-hmm. I logged online. I had a few buddies helping me out on their mobile phones and laptops trying to log in at the same time. You just couldn't get in, and you're stuck with those resellers, and it happens. Like, for example, UFC 205 in New York, hottest ticket of the year. Those tickets are gold dust right now,
dude.
Right?
You know, they had $100 tickets. The $100 tickets, to my understanding, were never even available to the public.
Oh, wow. I know.
The $100 tickets were never available
from pretty good sources that when the UFC Fight Club tickets went on sale, the only tickets they could get hold of were 400 and up. That's UFC Fight Club.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. It is crazy.
So you're right.
But I mean, you pay your Fight Club membership for the year, right?
But you're right. It's not just like that's a UFC business practice. I mean, right, that's what concerts and sporting events,
exactly.
Like, that's what they're doing now,
and
right?
I think in our space, we see, you know, all the kind of negative feedback on situations like that from fellow MMA fans and people from the MMA community. But it doesn't happen just in MMA. Listen, I go to WrestleMania every year. Harry, I know you're a
Which I'm very, very jealous about every time.
But listen.
You guys are pathetic.
Listen, John Morgan, I know you're not a pro wrestling fan, but there's a large portion of the MMA community that came from the pro wrestling world and came from that pro wrestling background.
I get
but
it. I get
I'm
it.
Just saying, WrestleMania is like the Super Bowl of the pro wrestling
right,
world.
Right, right. Every year. Sold out AT&T Stadium.
There you
right?
go. Dallas, Texas Stadium. Exactly, right? Every year, it's a struggle, man. You're trying to get tickets for WrestleMania and for Raw and for this and that. And like being an international visitor from the UK, you're gonna be like again, like I said, you and your team have to be on your, you know, on your A game trying to get tickets. Because if you don't, you're gonna be screwed. StubHub, get me in, Viagogo, and you're gonna be paying double, triple the price. It's just the way the world works at the moment, which is unfortunate. Maybe in a perfect world, the UFC could just sell tickets directly from them to the consumer. But at the moment, they need to go through third parties like Ticketmaster and so forth.
Well,
and
I'm sure they get money. You know,
yeah,
I'm sure there's incentives and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
We should also say on Saturday, there's also the rugby finals here, right? There's a big, right? Isn't there a big rugby?
God, I wish I knew.
Okay, good. So
this is how hardcore we are in MMA. We ain't got a clue about any of this sport happening.
If it was football, I'd probably be able to help you, but not so much rugby.
I think there's a rugby league final. I think, is that right? I see Simon
Head over
there.
There was one last Saturday.
I don't know if it's league or – wait, no, that's in Australia, right? All right. There we go. Warrington v. Wigan. Sure.
Means absolute nothing.
All right, cool. Well, we'll get that. Like, we obviously don't know what we're talking about there.
This ain't the Rugby League Roadshow.
I guess what I'm trying to get to is how drunk are people going to be on Saturday night? And I don't say that from a bad point of view because, listen, if my ass was going to a fight at 11:30 p.m. and finishing up at 5 a.m., I don't know if I would be the best representative of myself is what I'm saying. I mean, we've been, as you said, we didn't have to change our times, but we have been staying up this week since we got here. The first night, like I landed at 7 a.m. on Tuesday morning. I made sure to stay up that night until 6 a.m. That was Tuesday night. Last night, Wednesday night, we went to bed at 9 a.m. And then tonight, we'll see.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been trying to stay up. So I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, people are going to be consuming beverages. First, do you know anything about, like, the laws? Like, can they drink all night? And how – I mean, literally, like, is security going to be a concern in here? Like, are there going to be fights in the crowd?
Security have to be on top of the game. I mean, I see, especially on the local scene, there's been a few fights. Like, there was a show early this year. I won't name them for their own reasons. But they went on till 11:45 p.m., and one of the fighters' mums in the crowd, one of the mothers, actually – got so drunk she ended up kicking off in the crowd and tried to get into the cage to fight her son's opponent.
What?
Yeah, and then that show got cancelled because of that, and that was the main event. That was going into the third round. It was one round apiece.
Between the mother and the opponent, or the actual fighters in the fight?
The two fighters, of course. It was one round apiece. But then that ended up kicking off in the crowd, and the show got cancelled, which was ridiculous. But on Saturday, I'm sure you can expect a few assholes in the crowd for sure. But I know there's a rule where the arena aren't allowed to sell any more alcohol after 4:30 a.m.
Okay,
it's actually 4. I spoke to UFC officials today, so the arena are allowed legally to sell alcohol until 4 a.m., but it's up to their discretion when they cut it off.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So if at 2 a.m. they say, hey, you know what? I think these guys have had enough.
Yeah.
They can call it right there and then.
But I think they'll get some uproar if there's four more hours left
in
the show.
I know. I'll be pissed off. So if you guys hear what time they're cutting it off, be sure to let me know. I'll need to run
it. It's 4 a.m., John. It's 4 a.m. Just FYI.
You can definitely expect a rowdy crowd, though, because, I mean, people are going to be drinking from 8, 9 p.m.
Yeah.
So going into it, people are going to be highly intoxicated.
Right, and they're not going to have spent all week adjusting their bodies to be like
at the right time.
Like,
so you'll probably see many people fall asleep too. You'll see many bodies lying around.
Let's talk about the fight itself. Can you – I think it sounds like you can, but can you separate yourself enough from the fact that this is your guy, this is your hometown boy, this is somebody you've seen forever, to just be honest and tell me – how you see this fight going down? Is this going to be a great night for Manchester MMA fans, or does that dangerous Dan Henderson H-bomb land and repeat history?
I think I have Bisping winning, but I have him winning by submission.
Interesting.
Interestingly enough, okay. Like I've had a feeling all week long that he's going to take
that
submission.
Take before, so please let us know.
That's my hot take. I'm expecting him to win by submission. I feel like they're going to have a bit of a stand-up battle, and with Bisping having Perillo in his corner now, who's just a tremendous boxing coach, I really don't see him circling towards that H-bomb this time. I see him really shutting it down and not allowing him to get anywhere near it.
Right.
And I see a third round submission.
I mean, you would think, right? I mean, and I don't mean to diminish it. I mean, Dan Henderson is a legend. I think there's a lot of people. I think you can make the argument he's the greatest American mixed martial artist in history. The greatest.
That's a very good
American
argument.
Ever. Yeah. You can make that argument. Mm-hmm. But at this point in his career, I think you're so right. There's one weapon. There's one single weapon that you have to stay away from, and it's that right hand. And I'll tell you, I've been talking about it all week, but I'll say it here. In my head, I keep going back to the Shogun rematch where Henderson looked awful. I mean, I remember sitting there cage side in Brazil, essentially in my head writing the story that Dan Henderson, you know, this is his retirement, this is his last fight, blah, 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 blah. And then I wouldn't even say it was a mistake by Shogun. It was just – a scramble and an opportune time for Dan to throw, and he threw it, and he landed that right hand, broke the nose, finished. It's interesting because I think Bisping is going to have to be incredibly aware. I've said it. If it goes 25 minutes, there is not one moment of that fight that you can rest, that you can relax, that you cannot be aware of where that right hand is. If you're in the clinch, if you're in a transition, wherever you are, you have to be aware of where the right hand is. But you said it, Harry, with Jason Perillo in there, I feel like Bisping from the time that they first fought has become so much more technically better and so much more smart and intelligent in the way he fights. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. There's probably no – I mean, he should never, ever move to his left.
Never.
Should be like, no matter where you are, do not move to your left ever.
Yeah.
And the other thing with you picking a win by submission is I would think a takedown – I know Dan Henderson is a legendary wrestler and all those things, but this is MMA. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's
– not quite – his wrestling hasn't quite transitioned to MMA.
100%.
As well as other people's have in the UFC.
Bisping's kind of an underrated wrestler, right? I mean, his wrestling game is actually pretty decent.
I mean, look how well he hung in with Chael Sonnen, I think 2012.
Yep.
I mean, he hung in there with him very, very – extremely well.
I think his defensive wrestling is fantastic. Yeah. His takedown defense is great. Offensively, I'm not sure.
They're not fantastic.
No, exactly. But I think he can handle himself against some of the best wrestlers that come from a collegiate Olympic background like Dan Henderson.
Definitely.
All right, Harry, anything else? What else are you looking forward to on this card? Is there another fight or a fighter? Maybe it's one of the Englishmen that's on the card. Maybe it's just a fight that you're like, oh, I'm excited about this. I mean, I think this card is very much about the main event. Mm-hmm. But is there anything else that you're like kind of as a you know, an MMA guy, kind of salivating about?
I mean, just before we do move on to that, I want to say earlier today. Earlier today, when I spoke to Dan Henderson, he said if he didn't finish Hector Lombard in the fashion he did and say he would have scraped a decision, he would have retired there and then.
Interestingly enough.
All
right, well, maybe you do get to dictate the show. I'm sorry. Carry on. Wherever you want to go. Take it from here.
But to move on as you wanted to, I'm really excited for Danny Roberts versus Mike Perry. Mike Perry looked brilliant in his last fight on UFC 202. But Danny, I've watched him for quite a few years now, and I just really, if I can do a cheap plug, I put a piece out with him earlier today about his past 5 years. And this time 5 years ago, he was getting ready to fight at the Manchester Velodrome on a show called UCC X Fighter. It was coming to Christmas. X Fighter was some sort of like X Factor thing. It was an 8-man tournament. He fought a bloke called Pavel Durovda, who now fights at UCMMA. And he ended up injuring Danny Roberts in that fight, busted his knee. Danny was out for 6 months. So I spoke to Danny about that and said, in the next few months, in following that, like what your return was like and what you've taken from the past 5 years to now.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see how blessed he feels in the term to be fighting on Saturday. I really think this fight has a lot of explosive factors to it. I mean, Perry likes to stand and bang.
Yeah.
And so does Danny Roberts.
I think, it's funny. I think Mike Perry is one of those guys that's not necessarily the most, gifted athlete. I mean, he's just a dude that wants to brawl. You say the athlete versus the fighter or whatever. Yeah. Like, he's just a fighter. Like, I would not want to run into him on the street or anything.
They've had
like
a bit of trash talk on Twitter here and there. Danny told me today he wasn't really impressed with his trash talk. He said he felt like his trash talk was trash. And exactly that. He kind of made the old mum jokes and stuff like that, and he wasn't too impressed by it. He's remaining unfazed by him, it seems. But I am really, really looking forward to his fight. Davy Grant, another one. He now trains at SBG just down the road from here. I'm really looking forward to seeing him get back on Saturday. He looked really impressive in his London fight after nearly 3 years away. So I'm really excited to see him get back to action.
Awesome, brother.
3 years. Has it been 3 years already?
Almost 3 years.
Jesus Christ.
He came off the Ultimate Fighter, fought Chris Holdsworth and lost.
Time flies, so, man. In MMA, time flies.
I know. It's crazy. Even looking forward to Jimmy Manua. I hope he gets some serious cage time tomorrow night. Because the last two times he's fought in Europe or the UK, I mean, he fought Ryan Jimmo, and that ended up in corner retirement. He fought... Ryan Jimmo was an injury in the second round, I think. He fought... Cyril Diabate, that was a corner retirement. And even before, the last fight he had before he signed to the UFC on Bama 10, he fought Anthony Rea. That was a corner retirement. So hopefully he can actually get some serious cage time in now.
That's a dude that always looks like he has impressive skills. You know, sometimes he hasn't necessarily gotten to show it all the time, but it's there. It's there.
Sometimes he's like a carbon copy of Anthony Johnson.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
But he doesn't have those kind of like highlight reel knockouts that Anthony Johnson has in the UFC.
That's right.
But he's certainly capable of that.
He seems that he's a lot more of a calmer character than Rumble appeared to be. I mean, I think we saw that in his last fight where he took Rumble on 2 weeks' notice, I think it was. And you can see how Rumble flicks that switch a lot faster than Jimmy Manua was ever capable of. And we saw that against Teixeira. He dropped him in 13 seconds. So... I'm really looking forward to seeing Jimmy Manu. There's a lot of English fighters I'm looking forward to seeing them showcasing and how far they've come.
Could be a big night, man. I've been in some nights in Brazil where there's like 10 Brazilians on the card that all win. If things go the right way and they fall the right way, man, that atmosphere could be amazing. When you load it up with that many, you know, national favorites, if they start to win, you know, I've been there the flip side too, where they lose and the place is kind of dead. But if you get a couple of English wins, I could see the momentum really building, and then just
definitely.
The crescendo of Michael Bisping could be amazing. Awesome. Well, Harry Williams it's at Harry_Williams.
That's right.
Don't ever change it. We're trying to add some stuff. Harry_Williams. Keep that. Where else can people check out everything that you're doing?
You can check me out on. Instagram, Harry Williams MMA, and you can find all my stuff at yourmma.co.uk.
Awesome, brother, man. Thank you so much for stopping by and giving us a little the Mancunian.
That's correct.
That's such a weird word. I don't know. You shouldn't stand for that. You should just...
What? You guys don't have... Manchesterish.
Hey, we're like Las Vegan, but then you're
vegan?
I'm a
vegetarian?
Vegan. Exactly. You know what I mean?
I mean, what's strange of his Liverpool and Liverpudlians?
Oh, Liverpudlians. That's terrible.
Yeah.
That's awful.
So we just call them Scousers.
So. Perfect. All right. Well, on that note, we got to refill up on these frosty beverages here. And while we do that, then we'll kind of reset, bring in some new people. And Harry, man, thank you for stopping by, brother.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It's been a great opportunity.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Brit Pack is back. We're on the MMA Roadshow.
Simon, I don't know what you're talking about, but I thought we were supposed to be recording the Brit Pack. It's Thursday night here in Manchester, England. We're doing the Brit Pack MMA podcast, aren't we? Aren't we?
I fucking walk away for like 2 seconds, and you guys, what is this? You're stealing my whole show.
This is like when... the WWE invaded WCW or the other way around. It's turned into some weird
except
takeover.
Worse acting.
Like John Morgan gets that fucking reference, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because he loves pro wrestling. Always, if you meet him, always talk to him about pro wrestling.
Oh,
he loves it.
Love it. All right, Simon Head has joined us. Shamai Karsandu is still with us as well. But yeah, we should say, let's just start right there. If you are an MMA Roadshow listener and you're not listening to the Brit Pack, you should be, because these are two good friends of ours for sure, no doubt about it. And man, you guys are doing big things with your own podcast. Chugging right along.
Double figures. Who'd have thought?
Right.
11th show went out this week, and we haven't been yanked off iTunes yet, so I'm assuming we're doing things okay. So
it's coming, don't worry.
Oh, you sent the email, have you?
Oh, yeah. We've been complaining. The MMA Roadshow listeners are definitely, we're mounting against you.
It's understandable. You've heard the show, right? So it's all good fun. You know, any opportunity to sit around a table and chat MMA, whether it's with yourself, whether it's with my buddy Sandu, or whether it's with a cab driver on the way here. You know, I'm happy to talk MMA with anyone. So it's always good fun.
No doubt about it. You guys are two of the UK's leading journalists, no doubt. So for you guys to come together and do it, and two good friends of mine. So I definitely listen in every week, and I think everybody else should too. So let's talk about your point of view, Simon. I mean, you're a London guy, and you know, we'll hear from you as well, Sandu. I want you guys to kind of chime in on this. I mean, we heard from Harry from a Manchester point of view. You two guys are based in London. Man, what does this week mean to English MMA? Like, I feel like the UFC, like, again, I can't say enough about the fact that they decided, like, hell with it. Let's just do a show in Manchester. Let's bring Mike to Manchester. Like, I love it, you know? But I do feel like, I don't say they dropped the ball. I mean, they sold the damn place out. But kind of like Harry was saying, I feel like it could have gone a little bit further. I feel like they could have done it in local time. I do feel like, just being painfully honest, I don't think this is a big pay-per-view regardless. So let's say it was one of those pay-per-views that was going to do like 400,000 pay-per-views or something like that, which that even might be a bit much. We know for a fact that when the UFC does pay-per-views not in prime time, live on Saturday night, they lose money. When they do shows in the afternoon, they lose money, that sort of thing. I'm sure it would cost, but I don't know, man. Kind of like Harry was saying, the fact that I think it would have helped build the market a little bit more. I feel like maybe they should have bit the bullet a little bit and just been like, well, hell with it. Let's do it. We're going to lose some money now, but in the long term, it's best.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's you have to look at it as a loss leader at this point. You look at where the UFC is as a brand, as a business, as an entity. They've got there through Zuffa's business plan, and Zuffa's business plan has taken them from $2 million to $4.2 billion.
Not bad at all.
Now,
I mean, I remember
that's
first
the game plan that we
I remember
implemented.
The first time I did that, yeah.
That's the game plan me and Simon implemented in the Brit Pack, by the way.
We're currently at $4.2. Yeah. We're starting low, ground floor.
Not even pounds, just American
just dollars.
Yeah. Mind you, the pound will be down there soon, don't you worry about that. But no, back to the plot. The whole thing with the UFC, they've been purchased by WME IMG. They've got to recoup their money somehow. They're not going to do that by just following the same business plan that Zuffa have got. Because Zuffa have hit their glass ceiling with terms of using the US pay-per-view market as their sole source of income. They need to break out from that. And the obvious way to do that is to go out into markets where there is a strong appetite for MMA, but the market hasn't been really serviced in the way that it could be. It hasn't really been taken advantage of, if that doesn't sound too crude, the way of describing it. This would have been the perfect opportunity to really draw a line in the sand and say, this is a new beginning for the UFC on this side of the Atlantic. Put on a big name pay-per-view show. You've got the UK's favorite MMA son coming home. This is his homecoming, right? And it would have been the perfect showcase for the first ever world champion of the sport. It would have been an ideal opportunity to get the mainstream media on board. It would have got casual fans interested. You know, talking about this event, only the hardcore fans are going to be at the event because it's at stupid o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Only the hardcore fans are going to be watching the event live because it's at stupid o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no casual interest in it, really, because who's going to be up at 3, 4, 5 in the morning unless you're a nutcase like we are?
Unless it's appointment viewing.
Right. So
nobody's going to accidentally be flipping through the channels at 4 a.m. and be like, what is this fight?
Exactly. So, I mean, it takes me back to the London show when Michael Bisping fought Anderson Silva. That was on at prime time. Mm-hmm. And that fight could have been the Bonner Griffin moment for the UK. It really could have been, because it was one of those absolutely, and it's an English phrase, batshit mental moments, amazing, where you would have been picking up the phone saying, you need to watch this.
Had it been broadcast,
but
on
it was
BT
on
Sport.
It was on UFC Fight Pass. Exactly. It was an exclusive on UFC Fight Pass. Great for Fight Pass, not so great if you want to really get out into the market. And I think that's where the UFC needs to take a little bit of a bold move.
Yeah.
And they need to step out from their business model. Obviously, you've got the US pay-per-view market. They need to cultivate that and keep that going. But they also need to go out elsewhere. You talk to James Elliott. You know, we've spoken to him on many occasions at these European shows. And he talks about the need to go back to the cities where he knows we're strong as a sport. And he also then looks to go out to new places to spread the gospel far and wide and to help the sport grow. And that's kind of what the UFC needs to do overall.
Well, you touched on a lot of great things here, and I want to comment on a couple of them. And Sandu, I want to turn to you. First of all, let me just say, Michael Bisping, Anderson Silva, to me, needs to be on Fight of the Year list. I think a lot of people aren't looking at that as a Fight of the Year. To me, that's one of the most memorable fighting experiences I've ever had in my life. The emotion that was in that building, it was like cinema. It was like drama playing out in front of us. So I just want to throw that out there. I think, you know, a lot of people have already started. You know, we're getting late in the year. It's October now. A lot of people are citing other fights. I think that if it's not the Fight of the Year, it needs to be on the damn list of candidates. That's for sure, man. That one will stand out to me for the rest of my life. Other things you touched on. You know, you talked about WMEIMG coming in and buying the UFC for $4 billion. I've been seeing a lot of people tweeting and reports and thoughts that I hear there's going to be less UFC shows next year. I'm going to tell you right now, that's bullshit. There's no way. WMEIMG is a media company. Their entire job is to basically create media, and that's why they wanted the UFC. They're not going to deliver less shows. They're going to deliver more shows, if anything else, because they want to create as much content as possible and sell as much content as possible. Not only that, don't forget, they have a contract in place with Fox and their other broadcast providers. You can't just deliver less. That's the reason on November 19th we're doing two shows in one day, is because they fell behind. They had some movement around. They've got to play catch-up right now, basically. They're not going to do less shows next year. I'm sorry. I've heard those things out there. I think it's absolute garbage.
Don't apologize. Less MMA? How dare you?
Damn straight. Don't you tell me less MMA. The other thing, too, and this is where I want to ask you about, Sandu. I've heard – I have yet to meet Ari Emanuel. I'm looking forward to it. I definitely hope that I get the chance to. I've yet to meet him yet. But I've heard that Ari is coming in and is getting involved in everything. Like, literally, the words that have been told to me is, like, if Dana White was on crack, that would be Ari Emanuel. Like you think Dana's involved in everything. Ari's involved in everything. So, like, every single TV deal they're doing, every single, like, he thinks, hey, man, I can go in, I can get us a better deal, so I want to be personally involved. I don't want to ship that off to somebody else. I want to handle it myself. Now, again, I have yet to speak to him, but these are just things that I've heard. So I want to know, what is the future in England? Because, I mean, we've been friends for a long time. We've talked about the English MMA scene for a long time. We talked about, you know, TV, and Harry was just talking about, you know, it got 32,000 viewers. Like, dude, I come from a town of 30,000 people. That's a dot on the radar. You know what I mean? Like, that's nothing. You know what I'm saying? So what is the future here? I mean, what can be? Because I will say this, MMA Junkie, I get to see all of our traffic reports and things like that. Like, I get to see all that stuff. And, you know, they have Google Analytics and stuff like that. England's one of our strongest. Well, obviously, the United States is our primary market, you know, as far as web traffic goes. But England is always like 3-4. Okay, Mike Bond, Canada does okay over there. Canada's number two. It's the mecca.
That's just him. It's just Mike clicking his own stories, isn't it?
It's only because GSP keeps posturing and Mike's family for comebacks.
But England's always there. Now, probably some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, you guys sort of speak the same language that we do. You know, we obviously improved upon what you guys established, but
aluminum. Come
you know,
on.
What do you think? I mean, what is if you, I mean, can this be like? Because I think this is such a unique transitional time, man, right now, and I wonder where they can be. Because I remember, I mean, all of us would sit around and talk about, can they be on Sky Sport? Can they be on this? Which, you know, was the kind of, you know, the ESPN, so to speak, of England. Didn't happen. I don't know. What do you do? I mean, can this be like a huge profitable market? Can this thing get bigger?
Well, I always try to assess things on where were we a year ago, right? And me and Simon have discussed on our podcast as well, and
what's that called again?
It's called the Brett Pack. It's available on iTunes, Acast, and Stitcher. For free, by the way. Free.
We talk about where were we a year ago. So a year ago, BT Sport weren't showing the UFC Fight Pass cards, for example. Yeah. A year ago, there wasn't a British UFC champion, for example. Right. So things have changed. And, like, you know, the UFC called an audible, right? They had British Bisping as a champion. Let's do a Manchester card.
Love it.
Fantastic. Great move. Just like Stipe Miocic in Cleveland. It's the exact same thing. But
I love
you know,
it. Yep.
Yeah, exactly, right? But now in this new deal with BT Sport, which runs until the end of 2018, the same time as the Fox Sports.
Sheer coincidence, I'm sure.
Absolute coincidence. But they've got this new deal in place. And in this new deal, it means that every single UFC event will be broadcast on BT Sport.
Right.
Barring, of course, the exclusive Fight Pass prelims.
Yeah.
Right? But I think every year the UFC's kind of like, I suppose, exposure and relevance and media attention in the UFC just grows at that little bit more. Like you said, we're hardcore MMA fans, right? And it's like, what, I don't know, almost 2 o'clock in the morning. But we know that earlier on this evening, the BBC, right, they were, you know, putting out posts on UFC 204. You, John, you were invited to a special BBC Radio 5 Live, I think it was about a two-hour segment.
It's very cool. 90-minute segment. I didn't do the full 90 minutes. James did the full 90 minutes, but, like, Demian Maia was there. Ross Pearson was there. I was on with Dan Hardy and James Elliott. It was cool, man, and it was kind of funny because, as you said, to me, it reminded me of, like, the early days of, you know, the types of questions he was asking. And the host was fantastic. I mean, he was very intelligent. He was definitely not combative about MMA, but he was trying to learn. And it reminded me a lot of the early days of American MMA where people were still just, like, trying to figure it out. Like, is this brutal? Is this okay? You know what I mean? And I thought it was cool. It kind of made me see that I think – because BBC, obviously, incredibly respected. I mean, that's amazing. And for them to give 90 minutes to MMA, pretty cool.
On the one hand, you got the old, traditional, respected media outlet like the BBC. At the same time, you got the new millennial yep. generation of media outlet like Unilad, who are here covering the event using social media like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and so forth.
Dude,
right?
they have hilarious stuff on social media.
And you know what? Some people might kind of frown upon
if you're
that
not
kind of
if
media,
you're not following Unilad on like Facebook or whatever. I usually get it from like Abby's stuff, right. But they got funny stuff.
Listen, and again, some people might frown upon that kind of media, but
not
listen,
anybody listening to this.
No. Well said. They've got an incredible reach. In 2016, they have an incredible reach. And I just think, you know, the UFC in 2016 is in a very, very strong position here in the UK market, especially with a British champion. And you know what? We've got a few fighters on the card on Saturday night / early Sunday morning that could be the future UFC champion.
Let's get outside of UFC 204 for a second. I want to ask you guys what you thought. We kind of found out last night, today. We were kind of working on the story. I was in the middle of this personal tour of 4 fight weeks, 4 continents. It turns out that's going to stop at 3-3. UFC Fight Night 97 has been canceled in Manila in the Philippines. BJ Penn had to withdraw from the card. We're told due to injury, the scuttlebutt on the ground, is there maybe a little more to the story than just that. It has been incredibly interesting, this story, because as you said, we are on the ground as Abby Subban and Mike Bond are over there editing on the ground. We are on the ground in Manchester. But the talk on the street has been that there's a little bit more to the story than just an injury. The Philippines, I know you guys weren't going, but I had started to hear this a couple weeks back. The crew, these are, I think some people will not realize how the UFC works. The UFC has a lot of its own internal employees, but they also have third-party hires that they have to do to actually execute, like lighting.
Fixers and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
as well,
lighting, sound, all the stuff, you know, the building the cage, all those aren't actually internal employees. That's another company that's built. They handle the production of the whole venue. I had started hearing like a month ago, for whatever reason, people were telling me, John, you do know that you can't have any drugs in your system when you go to Manila because they might test you. And I'm like, bro, what? I mean, you know, what?
Even to insinuate.
I mean, why would you?
Very Christ.
You know, I was offended. And I was offended. And
rightly so. Rightly so, John.
But
besmirched.
Apparently, because as you said, we live so in the bubble that we don't even know what's going on sometimes. And the Philippines is going through some crazy shit right now. And the president has taken, like, this incredible stance against drugs to the fact that they're essentially, like, murdering drug dealers or murdering anybody that they find associated with drugs. And what we had been told, at least through the third party – now, this never came to the UFC. And I found out about this today. I talked to people. None of the UFC – I actually talked to multiple UFC staffers that have said I was never told anything like that. But I can tell you that some of the production people were told – if you go to Manila, you will be drug tested, and if you're found to have any drugs in your system, whether or not you ingested them while you were in the country or not, like, you're going to face repercussions. They can potentially jail you. They can potentially take your passport, and everybody was kind of freaking out about it. Now, I say all that just to kind of paint the whole picture because I've definitely seen some of it on social media. I don't think the event was canceled because of that. I've seen a lot of people saying, like, oh, man, the drug testing policy, like, they decided to cancel it because of that. Like, I don't think that was it, to be honest with you. The bottom line is they lost BJ Penn at UFC Fight Night 97, and there just wasn't a whole lot else on the card. I mean, this was a Fight Pass-only card. Now, had this been a Fox Sports 1 card, had this been something where they still needed to deliver to broadcast partners, I think maybe they would have been like, dude, we got to push through it. But I do think, I mean, maybe the whole drug thing played into it a little bit where they were just like, listen, because there is political unrest. I mean, the guy's made some crazy, again, I'm an MMA journalist, man. I don't, maybe Abby Saban could come over later and he's, you know, part Filipino. He's got that blood. Like, the dude has been saying some crazy stuff. He had to, like, apologize to Jewish people because he made, like, a Hitler reference. He said something about Obama. I mean, like, crazy stuff going on over there. So I wouldn't be surprised if the political unrest scared everybody a little bit. But bottom line is, you lost BJ Penn on a card that had nothing else on it. And I don't think tickets were doing that well anyway. And I think they just said, let's cut our losses. But I don't know. I say all that to just kind of throw it out there. To talk about what I've heard. Maybe you guys can share what you've heard, just kind of what you think. Like, it's weird. Like, canceling a USC event a couple of years ago was like, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Now, two things. Number one, it's less about that. And number two, I'm not even going to lie. I'm like, a week at home would not be the worst thing ever in my life. So, I don't know. Hearing that a USC event was scratched, we're in the middle of covering USC 204. But when this news came out and as we kind of started hearing about it this week, I mean, what was your guys' immediate take?
I'd heard very similar things to you, to be honest with you. And when you hear, I mean, obviously there's kind of two strands to this. And you touched on it there. There's the BJ Penn strand and there's the legal strand or the political strand to this. And I think there's more in that, to be honest. I mean, the BJ thing is obviously that's kind of a convenient reason to not do it anymore. Whereas had he still been there and still been fit, healthy, and all the rest of it, then it's a tough one to come up with an excuse to not go. The UFC have made a commitment, and once you make a commitment, you know, the normal way is you try and follow it through best you can. And sometimes you come across these little pitfalls here and there. You've signed up for stuff that you hadn't quite bargained for. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of grit your teeth and go through it. But it sounds to me like the UFC may have signed themselves up to something that clearly they didn't have the full disclosure of all this stuff beforehand. Perhaps it was, let's say, it wasn't inconvenient for BJ Penn to not be available for this fight night because he was the star of for that fight night, and without him on it, that star power disappears. All due respect to Ricardo Lamas, who in the grand scheme of things is a far more relevant fighter at the moment, but in terms of star power, BJ's the guy, and without him on the card, all of a sudden the UFC then has the little get out of jail free card, if you like. They can turn around and say, well, we kind of, you know, pinned our hopes on this being the BJ Penn show, and now BJ Penn's not there. We're gonna call an audible and sort of back out of this.
Sindhu, the official line on the press release, the very short press release that went out, did include a quote from BJ Penn that said he had a rib injury. That's what he's citing as the reason he pulled out of the fight. Listen, the last thing I'm ever gonna do is question a UFC Hall of Famer. That's BJ Penn, you know. But I do want to ask this. Is there any part of you that's almost, like, happy that he's not fighting anymore? Because I think that – I know that may sound weird to say. I mean, like, I was excited to go to Manila and watch. I mean, BJ Penn is a damn legend. So to get an opportunity to see him, it's still something special. I mean, there's still a handful of athletes in the sport that no matter how many shows you go to and how many fights you watch, you get that little chill on your arms. You know what I mean? You get a little excited. You're like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here watching – BJ Penn, dude. Like, this is stuff I'm going to talk to my kid about one day or whatever. But I'm not going to lie. Man, Ricardo Lamas? Mm-hmm. I think Simon said it in the most proper way possible. He's the more relevant fighter at the point, meaning he was going to kick BJ Penn's ass, unfortunately. I mean, I don't know. Is there any part of you that was kind of like, well, good? And do you think we'll see BJ again?
Well, look, first of all, in regards to the card being cancelled, it's not exactly UFC 151 level where it's a pay-per-view Jones, the greatest of all time, is kind of like, you know, withdrawing from the card and you have to cancel it and so forth. That's not what's happening here.
Right.
It's a fight night card. It's a UFC fight pass card, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is I loved the Dennis Siver booking. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great move in terms of matchmaking for BJ Penn.
Siver versus Penn, right?
Started building back up again. When I heard that he was fighting Ricardo Lamas, I was like, oh dear, here we go again. And it's like, guys, like, okay, fine. We saw him go through the whole the emotions with Frankie Edgar. But that's Frankie Edgar, pound for pound, one of the best ever to do it, hands down, future Hall of Famer. But if BJ Penn is going to be on your roster and fighting consistently moving forward, let's try to ease him back up again. Let's try to, like, build back the reputation that he once had and so forth. But damn, like, going against Ricardo Lamas in a main event slot, no less.
Yep.
I mean, damn. I mean, like, a part of me was like, for his sake and that storyline and that angle, maybe it was a good thing. And now that that, you know, has come to fruition and the card has been cancelled, maybe they can go back to the drawing board with Penn and give him someone like a BJ, like a Dennis Siver, sorry, and try and build him back up again. Because I think it's been so long. I know that he's training with Jackson Winklejohn and so forth, but we need to see this version 3.0, 4.0. I don't know what version we're up to right now with BJ Penn, but we need to see where BJ Penn is at in 2016 before we can start pitting him up against, like, the Ricardo Lamas of the world. You know what I mean?
It's funny because, so I tweeted this out the other night. We were actually sitting here. It may have been kind of late in the night, kind of early in the morning. I don't even sure what day it was. But we were talking about this, like, you know, if this fight's not going to happen. Because I think it became very apparent very quickly that they were not going to get a replacement for BJ Penn. And I was like, okay, can this card go on without BJ Penn? Now, it would have taken some significant shifting of where the bouts were. But myself, Abby, Mike Bond, we were kind of sitting around just kind of playing around. We're like, how could you say this card? Like, how could we move it? And here's what I said. Now, again, it's fight pass, so you don't necessarily need the main card. But had you taken, first of all, I mean, Derek Lewis in the main event.
Black Beast.
That's what's up. Marcin Tybura, just put him there. Take Ali Bagatinov, Kyoji Horiguchi, make that the co-main.
It's a good fight.
Put Mizuto Hirota versus Cole Miller in the third. And then open the broadcast up with Seohee Ham versus Daniel Taylor.
Who doesn't want to see Ham de la Silva?
That would have been fun.
You had me at Black Beast.
Right?
You had me at Black Beast.
That's all you had to know. It was just Beast. It would have been fun, man. It would have been good. Okay, let's talk about going back to 204. You mentioned Hall of Famer. Is Michael Bisping a UFC Hall of Famer?
Absolutely.
Was he a Hall of Famer before the title fight?
Yes. I think there's an argument for it. I don't think you have to have a world title to be a Hall of Famer. I think service to the sport, I think, can get you in. I think personality can get you in. I think your contribution over the whole of your career can get you in. The world title just cemented it for me. You know, we were talking about this. It was either earlier today. I have no idea what date it is right now.
I have no clue, to be honest.
And because this is weird.
We have really not seen much daylight. We've been trying to keep ourselves on the right time for the fights.
Well, this is weird, right? Because we're now on US time in the UK. My body clock has no idea.
Guys have been saying it. It's funny. I've heard a couple of the Brits saying this, and it's totally true. You guys have purposely jet-lagged yourself this week.
Correct.
Like, we suffer from
bending of a backwards.
You guys have had to jet-lag yourself, essentially, like, adjusting your entire body clocks. It's hilarious.
And it's worked. I'm knackered. But, yeah, now, in terms of Bisping and his Hall of Fame status, I think he's in line for Fighter of the Year honours as well. You think of if you look at his body of work just over the past 12 months, but if you look at him over his entire career, He's won the Ultimate Fighter. He's coached twice on the Ultimate Fighter when the Ultimate Fighter was any good. He fought at UFC 100. He's been a mainstay in the top 15, top 10 of the UFC middleweight division. He's spanned generations of the middleweight division. He's still relevant to the point that he got himself a title shot at ridiculously short notice, went in there, avenged a defeat, and he's now the world champion. And I spoke to him today and I said, compare the Michael Bisping of today with the Michael Bisping that fought Henderson at UFC 100. People were rejoicing when you got knocked out at UFC 100. Not everyone was in the Michael Bisping fan club back then. Whereas I think now a lot more people understand Michael Bisping, the personality. They understand the sense of humor a bit more. Maybe he's taken a few of the rough edges off over the years. He's a successful pundit. But over and above everything else, when you get a Michael Bisping fight, he just has the uncanny knack of getting you invested. Mm-hmm. And anyone who can do that is worth their weight in gold to their promoter.
It's interesting. I think he is a Hall of Famer, and I think exactly what you said. I think he could have probably made the Hall of Fame without that title fight, but that just made it like, okay, now it's not even an argument anymore. Now we don't even have to get into an argument. It's funny, though. I hadn't thought about the fact that he could be Fighter of the Year. I will say, I guess, if Conor wins at 205,
So you give him fight the year after he loses a fight.
He'd be 2-1.
It's a debate.
It's a debate. That's what I'm saying. It's a debate. That's what I'm saying. It's a debate. I mean, he establishes history. He wins two fights, you know, outside of his weight class. You know what I mean? You make the argument. Now, if Conor loses at 205, I don't think there's anything anybody else can do between November 12th and December 31st to overtake, you know, assuming Bisping wins. Oh, God. I guess I was kind of working on the assumption he won. Assuming Bisping wins on Saturday night, should he win? Sorry, Dan Henderson. Assuming he wins and Conor loses, I don't think there's anything another fighter could do between November 12th and December 31st that they would take over Michael Bisping as fighter of the year.
I don't think so. I mean,
you put down Anderson, Luke Henderson, and Rockhold. Granted, two guys that are past their primes, but still legends of the sport.
Ask Hector Lombard how past it Dan Henderson is.
Oh, wow.
You know, you and me were both captured on camera at UFC 199 after that Dan Henderson knockout, and we both had our mouths wide open. Mm-hmm. It's happened again.
You've been caught on camera with your mouth wide open quite a few times.
That's disgraceful. you will be getting a strongly worded letter from my lawyer. But yeah, we've been caught aghast at some of these big KOs. It happened with the Anthony Rumble Johnson fight against Glover Teixeira. It also happened with that Dan Henderson fight. And you know, he's 46. I wrote him off about 3 years ago. And for him to still be going is remarkable.
To be honest, I get set next to you a lot more than I really want to be honest.
Well, you know. You should consider it a privilege, man.
Simon Head is like a bad smell.
Thanks. I'll put out my Twitter bio.
You can try to get rid of it. That ain't going to happen.
All right. Well, listen. It's been fantastic.
It's so good to be here with friends.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. What I'm seeing now is that the glasses are getting a little empty, though. And I kind of have to pee. So
FYI, fans watching UFC 204, if it hits about 1:30 a.m., local time here in Manchester, England, and you don't see a bright blue collared shirt sitting cage side, you know exactly where John Morgan is.
I have to go pee. All right, let's reset these frosty beverages, and we'll be. Oh, wait, look at this! Not only is MMA Junkie Pear a fantastic photographer, it also turns out he's an amazing bartender.
He's wearing a jacket as well. Look at him!
Look at
he's
that.
Got some low rent sommelier.
We have an amazing crew here. All right, I still gotta go pee. Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. Welcoming in two brand new guests, Mike Bond. You know the young Mike Bond. What's going on, brother?
Not too much. You sound not too excited there.
What? I'm always excited. I got high energy, son.
Not bad for 1:39. Local time.
Yeah, that's how we do. We're just
pretty early. Exactly.
What would this be? This on Saturday night. This is going to be what, like first fight of the pay per view?
I think the pay per view starts at 3. So we're going to be
Jesus Christ.
We're going to be
way worse.
We're going to be in the thick of the FS1 prelim card. We're going to be seeing.
Oh,
some,
you're right. Main card starts.
I don't
at 3.
Even know.
Oh my God. Yeah, this is still
seeing
like early.
some guy.
And leading Dutch journalist Giovanni Chin.
Hi, man.
How you doing, brother?
I'm all right.
It's good to see you again.
Doing okay.
All right, let's talk about it. First of all, Gio, this is a European, you know, fight card, so obviously you cover European UFC events, but, I mean, are you here specifically because you want to cover Gegard Mousasi, or is it just because it's in Europe? I mean, what's your key focus this week?
Don't forget the homie Stefan Struve.
Of course.
Well, I mean, we were getting there, but you were in the co-main.
Well, we cover all European events, of course, but this event with two Dutch fighters, you know, we have to put our focus on them. So, on one hand, yes, we're here for Dutch fighters, but on the other, we cover all European events. So.
Right. Let's talk about Gegard first. I want to get from your perspective. I mean, first of all, he does know he sounds like Kermit the Frog, right?
Sure.
You guys have told him that?
Not really, but
you should tell him that he sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Okay.
I don't know if he goes. All right, now,
but we have a different Kermit the Frog in the Netherlands. So,
oh, so it's not the same Kermit, so it wouldn't make sense to him.
No.
Okay. All right. Talk about this fight with Gegard. All right. This has been interesting. And, Mike, you've been kind of pushing this a little bit. And you know, I've watched your interviews this week. And Gegard doesn't want to kind of cop to it. But, like, I mean, this is a fight that's been talked about for a long time, right? And I feel like we've had a lot of conversations along the years where Gegard kind of insinuates that Vitor's been ducking him and not taking the fight. And, Mike, I know you've been baiting him over and over, like just getting like, so tell me about, you know what I mean, like just trying. And he won't buy it. So you will probably understand Gegard's mentality. You'll understand. I mean, does he feel like Vitor's been ducking him? And if that's so, like, why is he not – I mean, why is he not just throwing it out there and just calling him out?
Well, at first, because he was planning to fight him in the affliction time, you know, but that the card got canceled. And actually, every time I spoke to him, he's always talking about having an opponent that's higher ranked than him. And for some reason – Belfort always comes up. Mm-hmm. So I'm not completely sure why he wants to fight Vitor Belfort. I think it's something like unfinished business thing. So, yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know why he calls him out. I think, you know, Gegard Mousasi is like a real martial artist, so it's all about respect. We did an interview today, and he doesn't really like all the trash talk.
Right.
He gets a little into it right now because it's a thing, but he's in essence, he's like – all about respect and about respect your opponent and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I don't know why he doesn't like literally call him out, but I think like he really wants to, but you know, he doesn't really want
that's
to come
the feeling
over.
I get.
Like
he
that.
Won't talk about that. No. Over like kind of the off record conversations I have, I feel like he thinks that Vitor's been ducking him. I think
yeah.
that he thinks Vitor's scared of him a little bit. So Gegard,
I think he's the type of fighter too that he's been very outspoken against performance enhancing drug users, people who have failed drug tests. He has no hesitation calling Machida a fucking cheater, but
True.
He, for whatever reason, won't attack Belfort like that, at least right now.
It's interesting.
It's interesting.
That is sure. interesting. I will say, speaking on that front, the Brit Pack, I'm sure they'll have like an exclusive entire episode on this, but Simon Head, check out his coverage at The Sun. He got an awesome video from Michael Bisping today. Simon Head does this stupid thing where he hands people a selfie camera and he makes them shoot it. I would be embarrassed to do it, but fortunately Simon has no dignity whatsoever, and it helps him in this spot. Like, he doesn't like really have any
no
self-respect
shame.
Whatsoever.
No shame.
No shame. And so he's been asking fighters to like shoot themselves on the selfie camera, which I would just be embarrassed to do, but it's worked out fantastic. And it worked out amazing with Michael Bisping. He did it. I was standing right there when this thing happened, and Michael Bisping was like, watch UFC 204 Saturday night, Manchester Arena, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, because I'm going to win. And then he like turns over, and Vitor Belfort was on the same stage as him. He's like, that guy's going to get knocked out because he's a cheater. Like,
a scumbag
cheater. I'm like, wow. Like, he literally just was like 3 feet away from Vitor Belfort and called him a scumbag cheater. Anyway, I got thrown off there, but I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Gegard. You have been following his career forever. You've been watching every step of the way. I like Gegard, man. I think he's an interesting fighter. I think he's an interesting person. He's not the easiest interview in the world, right?
True.
Like, his personality is that like a Dutch athlete thing? Is that just like a Gegard thing? I mean, I feel like he's quiet. He's I feel like he's opening up today. Actually, Mike Bond had a pretty good interview with him, man. I thought he had a little bit of. You know, I think he's getting better, but
sure.
I don't know, just his personality, like, it's funny because he used to get compared to Fedor.
Yeah.
You know, they had that connection and stuff. And there is some of that, like just the icy cold stare, the fact that, like, the fight's about to start and he looks like he's about to fall asleep in there. But that personality, like, is that something Dutch? Is that something?
Well, I think it's the on-camera personality. And when you like, catch him off-camera, he's, like, really a funny guy and really, like, somebody who's really outspoken and fun to be around with,
yeah.
You know? So I think it's like literally on camera is like more composed and more like not really showing emotions, but off camera and especially when you know him a little better, he opens up and actually in an interview we did today, he's like calling all Conor McGregor fans bums and he's like really opening up and really.
Was this in Dutch or English?
It was in English.
Yeah?
So it's going to be on our website soon. So might something to
take a look at.
Yeah, sure. So he's opening up right now, but I think it's an on camera thing that he's trying to, you know, for the audience, for the world, try to keep his respect and try to stay humble, of course. But when the camera's off, he's like really funny and cracking jokes.
That's
all
what's
along.
Funny is
yeah.
that I feel like in media things, like he's like disinterested. Like it's almost like, Jesus Christ, I don't even want to have to talk to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's really nice and he's really like funny and I don't know. It's weird. Like it seems like he's annoyed by the fact that he has to do media.
I think that's the reason why he's like one of the most underrated athletes on the UFC roster, because he's not really somebody that's really like, how do you call it, flamboyant or like really outgoing and in front of the camera, of course. But he would like to like have his fights speak for him, and I don't know. I don't think he's really like in this whole hyping fights thing, and calling out people and like trash talking.
He did say, and I'm sure he told you this because I've heard him say it a couple times. He said if he wins this fight, he wants to fight either Anderson Silva or Uriah Hall.
Sure.
Do you have one of those you'd like to see more than the other?
Well, I would like to see Uriah Hall. In my opinion, I wouldn't call it a lucky shot because it was a perfect kick, of course, and a perfect knee.
Yeah, you can't say a lucky shot. No. If you throw a punch or a kick with the intention of landing in somebody's chin, it's not lucky. Was your intention.
Of course. So it wasn't lucky, but I can understand that he wants to take that one back.
It was like a video game. His energy bar was way up here, and the other dude was here, and then – one
Bam.
Shot.
Yeah,
everything.
Of course. Yeah, so yeah. I can understand why he wants that fight. And, of course, I think everybody wants to fight Anderson Silva. It's a big name. And he wants to get his name out there. So if he's not going to do it on camera,
you'd rather
to do
the Hall, you'd rather see the Hall fight?
For me, no. For me, I would like to see the Anderson Silva fight. Just because he will get his name more out there. And it's good for him. And it's good for Dutch MMA. And as we said before, you know, MMA isn't that really that big in the Netherlands. So that could, like, create a boost for Dutch MMA. Like, you know, if Alistair Overeem would have won his previous fight, it would have been great for Dutch MMA. But unfortunately, he didn't. So all hopes is now on Gegard Mousasi.
Talk to me about Stefan Struve. I think Stefan's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He came into this sport, into the UFC, as a kid. I mean, an actual kid. And we've seen him kind of grow both physically and mentally, literally right in front of our eyes. It's weird because I feel like as a 7-foot-tall fighter, he's still struggling to use his physical talents, his physical gifts, like the things that you can't teach. I still feel like he struggles to use that, and I wonder why. I mean, I think about a guy like Simi Schilt, who was brilliant at making his body work for him. Maybe not necessarily the greatest athlete in the world, but was just amazing at working his body. And I feel like Stefan hasn't necessarily done that. I don't know. When you look at Stefan, I mean, do you see a guy that – I can remember interviewing him, you know, when he first came in the UFC, and he's like, I'm going to have 50 UFC fights. And you're like, damn, man, that's insane to have 50 UFC fights. But then you're like, wait a minute. Like, you're how old? And now we're and that's right when the UFC went from, like, doing, like, 12 events a year to, like, 30 events a year. And now, like, it's almost, like, 50. You're like, dude, you could get 50 UFC fights. So, I don't know. What do you see as the potential of Stefan Struve? Like, what do you – just tell me about your take of him as a Dutch journalist.
Yeah, well, Stefan Struve, as you said, is one of the nicest guys in Dutch MMA. He's always open to anything with us. And so we follow him for a day and doing some specials and that all that kind of stuff. And about the reach, it's exactly as you said. And for some reason, it looks like that he's not using the reach as he should have. And I think in training at the Black Zillions with Henry Hooft, you call him Hooft.
Hooft, yeah. Oh, is Hooft the right pronunciation? Hooft.
Yeah.
Thank you for correcting us, sir.
No problem. I'm here to do that. So it's Henry Hooft, yeah. And so I think he's getting better in using his reach. If you see his previous fight against Bigfoot Silva, he used it well, and he finished the fight in 60 seconds. Of course, if you look at the past couple of fights on Bigfoot, he lost a lot on KO. So I don't know how to compare it with other competitors in this roster. But I think that if he's still young, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Maybe Mike can help me with that, with stats, how old he exactly is. Stefan Struve and that. So
Mike actually just messaged me. He's 29 years, 6 months, and 27 days, and 5 hours, and 6 minutes.
That's Mike, yeah.
He's 28.
Yeah. Do you have any seconds?
I don't.
Almost.
I probably could.
I know he could.
He is still young.
He's still young.
Dude, like, he literally could get 50 UFC fights. As insane as that is.
Sure. And
what about the heart issue, though? Is the heart issue
– It's all solved. Yeah. He's got his operation. It's now – He doesn't even want to talk about it anymore. He's like, that's behind me. I just want to look forward and he actually feels like he's the best heavyweight out there. And I think if he uses, yeah, you can look at me like that. But
no. Keep going. Okay. That wasn't what I was talking about. I was ready to give you your stat.
Okay, no problem. But if he uses it,
Stefan Struve, might as well cut in, is 903,657,600 seconds old. So
Thank you. That's Mike Bond for you.
Which is 15 million minutes, 251,000 hours, 10,490.
All from the top of his head, of course.
There you go.
Yeah, but I think if he uses his reach better, and I think there's a bright future ahead of him. And if you look at his record, compared to his age, it's crazy. He has so many fights, and you know, it's not even he's not even past 30. You know? So
28 years, 7 months.
Shut
19
up,
days. You guys asked.
Let's get your thoughts. Okay, so the co-main event, Gegard and Vitor. Interesting because Vitor's dangerous. I mean, I understand. Say what you want, TRT, age, all those things. They're all fair. But that dude's dangerous in the first round. That dude's dangerous.
Sure.
Interesting because Gegard, he's not a fast starter. You know what I mean? He comes out and he chills, he studies, he does his little thing. Now, on my staff picks, I picked Gegard in this fight. I feel like Gegard is the better fighter at this point. I feel like he has, just a better overall MMA arsenal. I feel like he has more weapons at his disposal, so to speak. I also think that, his size, his range, his understanding of distance is good enough that even though Vitor is going to come forward, he's going to know that.
Sure.
It's not like Vitor is like, oh my God, going to surprise people that he's aggressive.
Well.
So what do you think about this fight? Because I will say, I think that Gegard's the right pick here.
Yeah.
But that said, Vitor is dangerous as hell, and Gegard starts slow.
Yeah, but, Vitor Belfort had his camp, and he has a stand-up coach called Tyrone Spong, and also a Dutchman, Suriname Dutchman, and he prepared him for this fight against Musasi. So, if you look at like Vitor Belfort's his stand up, like normally it's okay. It's very dangerous, especially in the first round. But if you combine it with ex-Glory champion Tyrone Spong, I'm not sure how long the preparation was, but it's still something to think about. Like they know each other. Spong and Musasi knows they know each other, right? So I'm a little worried about that, of course. But still, I think that Gegard has the edge in this fight. I think that mentally, like physically, I think he will win it.
Just to chime in and be another dickhead. To your point, Musashi has earned 32 of his 39 career wins by stoppage, 30 of those finishes in the first round.
That's crazy, right?
So slow. I don't think – I get your point. Like, he doesn't come out
a
starcha dude like Vitor does. Well, he'll just like –
always
think of, like, the Vanderlei fight. But he gets work done.
Yeah, you're right. And when I say not a quick starter, you're right. That's a great point. That's a great clarification because
– not Rumble.
Not to the point that, like, he needs to outlast you to the third or fourth round.
Yeah.
No, it's just that first minute or 90 seconds, like, he's probably not going to throw anything. Or he may throw a little kick out or a jab. Like, he's just kind of almost like Vitor.
We could have a staring contest for the first 3 minutes of this fight.
We'll see what happens.
Could be.
Let's talk about Struve.
Yeah.
Daniel Omelechik. I'm not going to lie. When Struve took this on short notice, I was like, that's who you took on short notice? Like, that's like the not the great. And listen, I picked Struve in this fight too.
Okay.
But if I was going to be a guy, if I was going to pick a guy to beat Stefan Struve, I would pick a dude that has no interest in striking with you, that just wants to take you down and lay on top of you for 15 minutes. And to me, that's Daniel Omelechik.
Yeah.
And then to not only do that, but to do it on short notice, I don't know, man. What did you think?
Well, if you look at both records, both fighters have like more submission wins than knockouts. And
both of these fighters?
Both of these fighters.
It's getting to that point of the night, folks. It's getting to that point of the night.
I'm Dutch, man.
Both of the jokes are coming.
If you look at these fighters, both have more submission wins than knockouts. So I'm not sure if it's true, if he's worried about taking down and being grinded out. He's good
off his back.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. I think standing Struve could beat him. There were even rumors about Struve fighting Francis Ngannou, the Frenchman. Mm. But unfortunately,
they're training together. Yeah, they're training together. Black Stallions,
so,
too.
Yeah, so he's fighting. Who's he fighting again?
Ngannou's fighting Anthony Hamilton. And Struve said he has no interest in fighting him because they had just spent the past 3 weeks prior training every day. I mean,
Struve is one of 7 million other people that have no interest in fighting Francis Ngannou.
This is true.
Yeah. He told us in an interview. Yeah, because I asked him for when it came out that his previous opponent canceled, he told I was to like, you know, maybe Francis Ngannou is something. You know, he's got a lot of hype, but he's like, no, man. They're training together, so it's not gonna happen. So about this fight. The trainer of Stefan Struve, Bob Schreiber, is a Dutch MMA legend as well.
Dirty Bob.
Yeah, man, it's Dirty Bob. He's expecting Daniel. I'm still having problems with his last name.
That's why I say it so fast, because I'm not saying it right. So I just go. That way, if I'm getting it wrong, you're like, I didn't quite hear if you said it right or not.
It's like Joanna. So just like. Dirty Bob's like thinking that he's going to rush Struve, so I think that Struve could get this fight, but it's a challenge. It's not an easy opponent for Struve, so I got to give him props for taking that fight, of course. And Daniel, I'll just call him by first name. Daniel actually contacted UFC when he heard that Struve's opponent got canceled, so he's up for it. Struve accepted it, so. I'm happy that this fight is still going through.
I want to ask you outside of the UFC, that one guy, what's his name? He's about like 5'8". He's like a middleweight. He's a black guy.
There are a lot of black guys.
He's a kickboxer. What's his name? Melvin?
Melvin Manhoef.
See, I want to hear the last name. That's what I'm trying to figure it out there. I want to hear the pronunciation before I said it.
Melvin Manhoef.
Okay,
yeah.
Manhoef?
Yeah, Manhoef. Okay. Yeah.
See, you just blew my mind with the other pronunciation. Now I'm worried that I'm saying everything
wrong.
No
problem. You can ask me anytime. All Dutch. Because it's Stefan. It's Stefan Struve. It's not
Stefan Struve.
Stefan?
Stefan.
Stefan?
Almost. Stefan Struve. It's not Stefan Struve. It's Stefan Struve.
Are there any other ones that annoy? Is there like one that like personally annoys you that you're like, dude, you guys say this so wrong?
Well, that's Stefan Struve.
That one bothers you. And
Alistair Overeem. It's Alistair Overeem.
Okay.
And let's see what's more. We got Shermana de Randami.
Oh yeah, we'll never get that one.
No,
right.
Probably not.
Randami.
They Randami. Yeah, it's.
Do you want to see her fight Cyborg?
Well, she actually got the fight offered to her, right? Yeah. Previously, why not? I think
she doesn't want to die.
No, she's up for it. If you think, look, Cyborg got beaten, okay, it was a kickbox match by Yurina Bars, you know.
That's what they all say. That's what what's her face who just lost to her just said. Oh, she can be beat. We saw her losing a kickboxing match.
Landsberg,
she can lose. Yeah, Leo Landsberg.
Yeah, but
look what happened. You literally look like a different person.
I don't know, man. I think Jermaine Durand me. I think of all previous opponents, she might have the best chance
she's
to win.
She's definitely a step
she's
up
long.
From Leslie Smith or
I
you
think
know,
so
Landsberg.
Too.
Why not?
It's an interesting fight. She's got the length. She's not a small 135er any stretch of the imagination. That 140 thing would make sense. And I actually said that fight for my matchmaker piece after she beat Landsberg.
I like it.
So.
That's
I
great.
Like it.
And before the UFC Rotterdam fight, she actually got that fight like offered to her, the Cyborg fight.
What was the story? I can't remember. You're right. Why did she turn down? I remember there was something going on.
No, well, to me, she told that she just wanted to fight at home.
Right,
like
she wanted to fight
the Netherlands. Yeah, that was a bigger honor for her than fighting Cyborgs was at home. And, man, we all seen the walkout.
Oh, it was amazing.
She
got a better response than anybody else that night.
Yeah, so that was crazy. And it's because she's like an awesome chick. She's like very open and – unfortunately, she got injured in the last fight, and she's one of the UFC athletes in London. It may not get the exposure she deserves, but the people that really follow MMA all like support her. And
I'll be honest, that's the matchup I'd like to see.
Me too.
Her and Cyborg is the fight I see.
I mean, like if we're not doing a Holly or a Ronda or a Misha or, you know, one of those big three, four that we want to see, if it's going to be outside that group, that I agree, that's the fight I'd like to see the most.
And sure. I'll say this, I'll be honest with you. I would say Ronda would be first, just because it's kind of like Pacquiao Mayweather, like
you just got
it's later
it,
than yeah. it was supposed to happen, but sure. it still needs to happen.
Of course.
Yeah. Holm would be second. I think I'd like to see Holm over
Tate.
Over
yeah.
De Randami.
Yeah, the roll the R.
Roll your R's? You guys roll your
yeah,
R's
of course.
In Dutch?
Yeah, we do.
Okay, so I'm just going to start saying it like Spanish from now on.
Well, almost.
De Randami.
Yeah, it's all right.
So I would okay. say out of that four, I'll be honest, I think Tate would be number four. I think it would be Rousey, Holm, and then De Randami.
Yeah, but if you but UFC probably going to do Rousey, of course.
Of course.
But I think that on the me is a really good pick, and I think she actually listens to this podcast. So, Jermaine, if you listen to this,
my girl Jer.
Okay.
All right, Mike Bond, checking in from Canada, dude. Give us the perspective from Canada. Obviously, I know since you do speak for the entire country of Canada. I know that you and GSP probably kick it on a daily basis. You'll probably just, you know, he's just trying to clear it with you. When
just build igloos together and ride our sleighs and just play hockey together.
Bro,
talk French.
Thank God you took the pressure off me because I didn't want to say that, but I assumed that was what's going on. So thank you. When's he coming back? When's he fighting? What are you hearing? Is he going to be 206? Is he going to be the main event at 206?
I'm hearing the same things we're all hearing. I feel like this is being – you know, far too public almost between the things Dan is coming out and saying. George doesn't want to come back, questioning his desire to fight and his passion, which is just so weird to me. And then beyond that, we have, you know, George coming out and saying as well, I need this, I need that. Like, I'm on the old contract. Similar things that Ally Quinta was like mimicking. He signed this contract before Reebok was even in existence. We know George was making huge money from both Under Armour and Affliction, two of his main MMA sponsors. He obviously can't wear those into the cage or on fight week anymore. They were, you know, giving him a very healthy deal. And I mean, I'll ask you, we've had kind of this conversation before, and I know you've had some behind-the-scenes talks since that deal came in. You've said, you know, if a fighter feels that they are not being paid what they're worth, if you can show them you're getting X amount, they will work with you. And, you know, I can say to you, I've had some conversations, I won't name names, but behind the people, or of the exact people, but they've said, you know, George is asking for a lot, but he's a guy that we'd be willing to make the concession for. So I don't know what's going to happen. It's obviously coming up soon. UFC 206 is, what, pretty much exactly 2 months away, yeah. Something like that. It's coming up pretty damn quick, and they're going to need to figure this out soon. But George said, I think it was as recently as yesterday, to Montreal or Quebec news outlet RDS, said he has a big announcement coming next week. So
here's what I've heard, and it's a great point. I mean, first of all, everything that you're saying is 100% dead on. I mean, it's not a coincidence of when he decided to go into the USADA testing pool, right? That's not
exactly a coincidence. 4 months to the day.
Yeah, not a coincidence. The other thing is, as you said, if there's a guy that you make concessions for, if there's a guy that you know make changes for, it's GSP. You know, it's GSP, which is crazy because it's so funny that GSP is like literally one of the biggest stars in the sport because his fights. I mean, you know you're getting 25 minutes, right?
Yep.
Sure. You know you're getting 25 minutes, yeah. Which is funny because we always talk about how we value knockouts and we value finishes and submissions and all that stuff, but you know you're getting it. But
it's because he just did it right from start to finish, and he built himself up so perfectly. He had a team behind them that knew how to make him cater to PR and do all these things. And I mean, we hear if Michael Bisping is to be trusted now, I don't know if Bisping trash-talking during a Q&A is – anything is that to be taken seriously, but you know, he's saying $10 million he wants to fight. I don't think that's horribly, you know, too high of a number,
right?
I mean, if George St. Pierre, I believe my friend John Pollock from the Fight Network in Canada tweeted out, if George came back and he added 350,000 pay-per-views to a card, that would easily cover the $10 million.
Sure.
Password. That alone, not even talking about what they'd get from
merchandise.
And that's
just talking about the UFC split. I mean, because that's the 50-50 split. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, that seems more than fair. I think right now, if we were going ahead with that card, 206 and Daniel Cormier and Anthony Johnson as your main event, I would be shocked if it did more than 400,000 buys. Like 400,000 seems like even being very generous.
Well, and again, here's
George comes back. I think that's close to 1 million, no matter who he fights.
I would agree, and it's a sellout and all those things. And again, we're talking about you know, just evidence that we're looking at. Let's not forget. I can't remember who tweeted at him, but I saw Dave Schaller like went out of his way to say
this isn't the main event.
Bout order to be determined. Yep. I mean. Which we all know the bout order is to be determined, but not when it comes to the main event. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, it's like, oh, that, you know, that's not going to be on Fight Pass. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, like, again, we're looking at all these things. I think it's going to come up because here's the whole thing, and maybe, Mike, you can throw in some insight. I have heard that GSP doesn't need to fight. He's asking for a lot of money because he feels like he deserves a lot of money. But from what I've been told, if he just ultimately decides, like, hell with it, I don't need this headache, he's fine because there are other fighters, and we have multiple examples of it where people have taken fights, and we know at the end of the day they need money. That the reason they took the fight is they need money.
Yeah, yeah, no,
everything I've ever been told about GSP is he's good.
He's been very smart with it. Yeah, no, I agree, and it's not like he's been sitting on the sidelines for the past 3 years with no income coming in. I believe he still has deals with those sponsors. They pay him. I mean, he's filming action scenes and cheesy action scenes and Kickboxer remakes, but, like, whatever. He's still doing things.
Did you see Kickboxer? I heard it sucked.
I didn't see it, no. I haven't watched it. I saw some clips. Yeah. I saw some, like, clips of his fight scene and whatever.
Well, I'm not saying it's GSP's fault. I'm just saying I heard it. I mean, I'm just saying I heard it.
I mean, if you're putting together a fight scene with GSP and Steven Seagal, like, what are your expectations really? Like, there's only so good that could be, even if they, like, you know, absolutely kill it. So, but still, I agree.
That was such a good movie, dude.
He doesn't need the money, I don't think, but I think he just has the passion back, at least to do it one more time, two more times, to be able to cash in through this new era. Sure. Where, you know, it's kind of a different world than when he fought previously, you know, a lot more attention on the sport, all these things. I think him coming back, it's good for everyone involved. And of course, the UFC, we know how they operate. They're going to, you know, try to strong arm it as long as they can, but eventually something's going to have to happen here. They're either going to have to make a deal and he's going to fight in Toronto, or it's not going to happen, and, like, who knows what happens in the future after that. But everything adds up, seems like it's going there. I mean, for them to say the bout order is determined. They have on the UFC website right now, if you go to, like, the card, it has a few fights on there, and then, like, the main picture, it's just, like, TBD versus TBD. So they're doing stuff, but which I almost think is a mistake.
Yeah,
because now, if not people now, expecting it, if course, no one else gets added to the card, like, people are disappointed.
Right. And
Cormier and Rumble is an awesome
big
rematch.
Fight.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. It's going to be great, but it's not, like, the same, you know, I would just say it's the main event and be like, maybe there's more coming, maybe there isn't. But now, you know, tickets aren't even on sale yet, so
it's not sure.
Like, you have to really worry
about
it.
I'm not sure if Cormier versus Johnson is going to be a great fight.
I think it'll be interesting. I mean,
interesting.
The first fight I enjoyed.
I picked Johnson the first time around. I was feeling pretty good early on.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think, in theory, I think more I meant, like, will it be a great fight in reality? No, it's a great matchup.
Yeah,
it's
That's correct.
Top light heavyweights that are able to compete right now fighting each other. Of course, John Jones is on the sidelines. So, yeah, that's a matchup that I dig, and hopefully GSP does come back because I would love to see that fight get the GSP bump on it, just like we're seeing on some of these other cards like Woodley and Wonderboy and Joanna and Carolina getting the bump on 205 via Connor and Eddie. Like, they do it smart. I mean, they'll do the same thing, I hope, with 207, if Ronda comes back, put Dominic Cruz and, you know, Cody Garbrandt or something on that card. Like, they're getting smarter with how they position these title fights if they do two on the bill. So we'll have to wait and see, but I would expect to know about this 206 stuff, you know, rather soon.
I agree. All right, Mike, 204, we've talked about the main, we've talked about the co-main, but, you know, you're a guy that's diving into the stats. Is there a fight on here that you're pumped about? Is there a person that you're looking at thinking that there may be future greatness there, or is there a grudge match that you want to see? I mean, is there one fight? Because I always say this. I mean, we get on the plane and, you know, we come someplace, and of course we know the main event, of course we know the co-main event, but I think all of us, we're hardcores. You know what I'm saying? Hardcores. There's always, like, that one little gem. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's on the Fight Pass prelims. Maybe it's somewhere else where it's like, you know, everybody else is thinking, like, you're an idiot. But you're like, that's the one I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
You got one?
I think there's a few. I mean, you know me. I'm never going to turn down a chance to watch the greatest striker in MMA, Albert Tumanov. Like, you know, that's my boy. We had
Tumanov.
We've had some good interview moments with him. So. So him, obviously, always
he's
looking
the best.
For
I love that guy.
He had a tough setback in his last fight, obviously, against Gunnar Nelson, but interested to see. He's only 24. I think he's actually only 23. So he's a guy, he's growing still, like has a lot of room to improve. Excited to see him. You know, we spoke today to Mirsad Bektik, who's returning. I mean, that guy is the definition of an MMA prospect. 25, yeah. Like 10-0, unreal wrestling
and
game.
Just handsome. Just
he's just.
I mean, good looking, rolled in with a jacket and a scarf
yeah.
on.
Yeah, and like he's had a moment or two of dull fighting, but he's a guy that has a lot of room to improve.
Did you see the way the hair? He had like some. Like David Beckham type hair yeah. going on in here, yeah. a little bit of highlights, a little bit of sway over here,
yeah.
man.
Yeah, but no, he's.
Sorry, we were.
Yeah, sorry, we're supposed to be here talking about the fighting, not how pretty these men are.
No, but that's great, and it's funny because obviously undefeated record. A lot of people look at him as a legitimate top prospect, and it's funny because. You know, he has to deal with a late replacement, a guy that's not even technically in his division, but a guy that's tough. I mean, Russell Doane is, he's not, it sucks because it reminds me a hell of a lot of Portland last week where we were talking to Smolka, where you're like, dude, you're taking this fight against a guy that you literally have nothing to gain. You know what I'm saying? Like, he beats Russell Doane. And what? Do people go like, oh, fantastic victory? They're just like, bro, you just beat a dude that stepped in on a week's notice that wasn't even your weight class.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, that dude can tap you out. Like, he's got nothing to lose. Stuff can happen. I think that's I'm not going to say it's a dangerous fight because I think I buy into the hype. I think Mirsad's the real deal. I really do think Mirsad's the real deal. But, man, anytime you face a tough dude on short notice – where you essentially have nothing to gain, I think that's dangerous. I think the possibility of the mental letdown, you know what I mean? Of like, and then you're like, well, this guy's nobody. They just got me a guy. Now I'm just going to collect my check. It's like, no, bro, you're in the UFC. There are none of that. And I'm not saying I've ever felt that from Mirsad, but I'm just saying, like, it scares me when people are in that situation.
Yeah, and I mean, just to follow up on that, there's a lot of things here with him. He had an ACL tear, which is what's kept him out since May of last year. Was that due to you? We know, like, I think ACLs, they've come a long way. That used to be a career ender in football and stuff, and now it's like routine surgery
for
this
guy. Yeah,
now it's
8 months and you're back.
Yeah, so it's, I don't think it's as like devastating, but who knows? Everyone takes it differently. See, you know, more gun shy, all these things. But I did have the chance to talk to Mike Brown of, you know, American Top Team today, one of his main coaches, the guy who, you know, even as of a few years ago has been. It's one of his dudes that he's like, you know, grooming very carefully. And I asked him the question, like, straight up. I was like, you have three changes. He had opponent change, as Mirsad told me. He was doing his connecting flight here from, I guess he did Florida, New York, over to England.
Right.
And he said he was at the airport in New York getting his connecting flight when he found out that the second fight had fallen out with Canada's own Jeremy Kennedy. Yeah, and
that was
bizarre.
He said he was just like 12 hours.
He was just like, okay.
And they're like, no, it's out.
Yeah, and he said he had very brief communication with the UFC. They're like, we're working on it. And he's like, okay, he got his flight and came over. So I just asked Mike, I said, how do you keep your guy focused through all this stuff? And he's like, Mirsad, there's guys where you have to be like on top of them and just be like, you know, stay focused, stay to the game plan. He's like, Mirsad is not one of those dudes. No. He is going to take, you know, the 100th ranked guy seriously. He's going to take the champion. So – you know, of course, you all say this as his coach. He's not going to be like, man, I'm kind of worried about him. But Mike Brown, you know, you've known him for a long time.
Yeah,
I've known him for a long time. He is a dude that gives it to you straight.
He keeps it real.
He keeps it real. He'll tell you, you know, he'll tell you Kimbo never came and trained in the gym. He'd come in one day a week. Like, he'll keep it real with you. So stuff like that, I want to take his word for it. And, yeah, Mirsad's a guy that we all need to look out for sure.
Nice. Giovanni, anything? Obviously, you're following the Dutch guys, of course.
Sure.
But anyone that just as a fight fan, you're like, I can't wait to see that one.
Well, there's a 2-time Bama champ coming up. It's Mark.
Casey, right?
Dear Casey.
Everybody says.
I heard he's
a
like
a lot of people are hype on this guy.
So
first fight of the night, and a lot of people in this area are hype on this guy.
Yeah, man, he's undefeated. He's been like a 2-time Bama champ. So I'm really interested in looking at his fight and see how he performs in the UFC at this event, especially. So I think that fight is very interesting to watch. What else? Yeah, man. You know, I'm for me, it's just the main event and the co-main event, and of course the Dutchies, and I like the prelims as well. But I think that I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Diakisi.
That's the way I've heard.
So you help me with the English names, and I have. I don't know, man. I'm from the Netherlands, man.
Yeah, don't listen to the peanut gallery.
To hell with the peanut gallery.
So I think that will be a good matchup to Lagarde for, man.
Oh, awesome. Well, UFC 204 is this Saturday night, of course. We will have full coverage of that, MMA Junkie. We will also have the return of the and a half episodes. We're going to do it one way or the other. We're going to be rushing to get to the airport, but after technical problems in Brazil, after I had to give Cold Coffee a week off, that's two events in a row we didn't have an and a half episode. We're going to do that this week for sure. So we will get that done. Listen, I did want to say quickly, Josh Simon passing, man, hit me pretty hard. He was a guy that I had met during his time on The Ultimate Fighter. We had conversations. I mean, obviously he was very media friendly. He was very open
was
and out
the
there,
media.
Man. He was a good dude, man. I got to see him, you know, early this year. I went to Milan and got to do the Venator gig, and he was there. Spent some time with him, got to sit down and have a couple glasses of wine with him. His dad was I met his father. You know, him and his father were going to go to Israel after that. And we talked about a lot of stuff there and just had, like, several conversations and really enjoyed him. I mean, the photos that you see of him, man, the smile that he had, it was just so infectious, man. His energy was awesome. Sioux Falls, you know, earlier this year, Sioux Falls, you know, no media there at all. I mean, no media there at all, other than me and Fernanda traveling up there. And so we actually had a lot of time with the fighters. And
shocking, you don't get a media turnout 4 days, booking an event 4 days after the biggest show in UFC history.
Crazy, you know. And we got to sit there and talk to him a lot, and just enjoy speak to him. And it was funny because, you know, he ended up of course losing that fight against Tim Boach, and His coaches at MMA Masters have become good friends of mine over the years as well. They're really good people, and we ended up at a bar. Shocking, right? I know. We ended up at a bar. It didn't know he was gonna be there. Like, we just went out to go get some beers or whatever, and Josh happened to be there, and he was, man, it was so, like, just open and honest, man. I was like, he was bummed, man. I think he was, you know, he still had some ice in his hand that he was holding on his face. And I remember just telling him, like, dude, like, there's no way the game plan was for you to be in the clinch as much as you were. Like, there's no way you were supposed to be in the clinch. And that just goes to show you, I guess, how open he was. Like, I mean, how many fighters would you walk up to after they lost and you'd be like, your game plan, that was not your game plan, right? You fucked up, right? You know what I mean? But, like, that's how open he was, you know? And Josh was just like, yeah, man, I wasn't supposed to. I don't know. I was feeling amazing going into the fight. And I don't know, man. He just – fuck, dude, he was a good dude, man. He was a really good human being, and his energy really was, man, infectious. And I'm bummed, man. I'm not gonna lie, dude. It's been really.
It's been a shitty year for not just MMA passings, for just, you know, celebrity kind of notable names in general. You can, you know, go back and list all of them that have happened. It's been a terrible year, but to focus on Josh specifically, I mean, he's the type of guy that, you know, he'll follow you on Twitter because he's, like, kind of paying attention to the media world. But he's a guy, and, you know, I very infrequently do this. But if you're, like, you know, tweeted out, like, damn, I had a bad day, or, like, something like that, which, like, you know, I feel like that's not stuff I put out on Twitter. But, like, sometimes it happens from time to time. And it did once. I can't remember exactly how long ago this was. But he's a guy that you've never interacted with him in your entire life. You just follow each other on Twitter. You know, it's kind of a small little bubble there still. But he's the guy that would DM you. Be like, yeah, man, like, you okay? Like, anything you talk about? I hope your day gets better. Mm-hmm. Hope this and that. Like, I've been through some rough times. Like, you know, he went through a lot of stuff with, you know, the passing of his girlfriend, just all the stuff. We don't need to go back and recount it, but he was that guy. He was the guy that he doesn't know you, doesn't know anything about you, doesn't know your problems, but he, if he saw that you were having a tough day, he would reach out and try to uplift you.
100%.
And that's more than, you know, more than his knockout of the year worthy head kick of Eddie Gordon, more than, you know, him being an amazing writer, doing some great interviews with Jeff Nowitzki from USADA that he published on both BloodyElbow.com and UFC.com. On top of all that, he was just a very nice, genuinely good person. So you can tell when people out there be nice because they're like just trying to live up to some sort of expectation, or like just be nice because they feel like they have to. He was a genuinely nice person. And he clearly had his demons, but we all do. And it's unfortunate from what it seems like that
I don't want to speculate on that. I mean, until we hear the facts, I definitely don't want to speculate on that. Yeah. I hope, I mean, and kind of what you're referring to, of course, is the fact that he had beaten addiction. And listen, I've never really talked about this much in my life, but I mean, I had to go to rehab when I was a teenager for some other things. So, I mean, I have, I was right in my teenager, early 20s, man. So, like, I get beating addiction, man. I've had to do it.
Do you ever really beat addiction though, or do you just put it, you know?
Look at my lifestyle. You think I beat addiction?
Well,
you know
get,
what I'm saying? You're right. That's what I'm saying. You put it away. You push it away for a little while. But again, until we know all the facts, I don't want to speculate on that. But
of course,
I don't know. I guess the thing is, I just want to say, man, he was somebody that, and kind of exactly what you're referring to there is the fact that I wouldn't say like Josh was my friend, my buddy. Like, I don't
know.
I don't have fighter friends. I mean, I have a lot of people that like I talk to, and but I don't go hang out with them. That's not what we're supposed to do. We're here to cover the sport. But that's a guy that, as long as I hope I cover the sport till the day I die, man. Honestly, that's my goal in life, is I want to do exactly what I'm doing. I think I'm probably one of the few people in life that says I'm doing exactly the fuck what I want to do right now. And I hope for the rest of my life I get to do exactly what I'm doing right now. But no matter how long I cover the sport, no matter how many athletes I meet, no matter how many interviews I do, I will never forget that guy. He was somebody that impacted me. He was somebody that I will always remember. And I'm just bummed about the whole situation, man. And I mean,
yep.
It's
unfortunate. I mean, it's obviously tough, a part of life. Death is part of life, but it's unfortunate that a guy who, you know, had so much going for him, it seemed like, has that all taken away. And, you know, condolences to the people that did truly know him in life, his family, his friends.
100%. It sounds like he impacted a lot of people, which is, you know, it's been cool to see. So I just did want to make mention of that, because I will definitely miss Josh. He was a good man.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
R.I.P.
Not the greatest way to finish the night, but a good man. I definitely did want to say something. So, fights on Saturday night. We'll cover all that in the meantime. Thanks for listening.